Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are underneath the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Glad we're back. Feeling fantastic. Went down for the count. Somebody called me Scottie Pippen. Didn't know how to take it, especially with recent events. So yeah. I'm good now. We're all good. We're back in business. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. The hashtag still is Mr. AVO. As presently stated, Nikias is still on his 22nd trip to Atlanta in this calendar year. He has a very fresh-to-death polo on. Appears he has a club appearance. Him and Lou Will going to hit it up after tonight's big night. So let's enjoy it while we can, folks. Let's have a good time. Try our best.
Going to have a 12-minute pod. No, there are there are no club appearances.
I can't wait for this pod, by the way, before Nikias goes. We have Lou Williams playoff performances, Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, DeMarcus Cousins. Bucks and five is gone.
Yes.
We got a lot to do. The hashtag might be Big Mad. We'll see.
There's a lot to be big mad about. First and foremost, glad to have you back. Glad you're feeling better. Was very weird not podding on Sunday nights. It very much became a part of my routine as we've been doing this podcast since January. So it was weird to just kind of have, not necessarily the night off, but it was just, I don't know, it was a change up that I wasn't prepared for. So I'm glad to have you back.
You missed me. It's okay. You can say you missed me.
I did.
Someone on this earth has to, so it's all right.
Come on. No, I did. It was very weird. So I'm glad that you are feeling better. There has been a lot of basketball played. As you mentioned, I am in Atlanta. I have been in Atlanta since Sunday. Was here for game 3 and game 4. Crowds were great.
You've been there like 6 days?
No, 6 days. Okay. I came to Atlanta after church on Sunday, went to the game, chilled on Monday, went to the game tonight, and I'm chilling. So
that itinerary seems pretty light. It seems like you're keeping something in your pocket, big guy. It's all right, though.
I'm not doing this with you. Anyway, we have plenty of playoff basketball to talk about. But first, before we dig into the basketball, we have to discuss what's going on in Portland.
Trails are being burned, not blazed. Well, I guess technically that's the same thing.
Does that count as the first one of the pod?
It was a bad attempt, but I had to get back in rhythm.
Okay. You did miss Sunday. You were very recently upgraded to probable. You're playing, so I understand you got to kind of knock the rust off, get in the flow of things. But on a serious note, we didn't pot on Sunday. So during weekend playoff basketball, it is announced that Chauncey Billups will be the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers. And there was backlash to his candidacy, first and foremost, because of his alleged sexual assault case back in 1997 that was resurfaced. And for a large chunk of people, including myself, it's something that was very recently learned. So
I had no idea. I had no idea until I think you put out the picture of him in a Boston jersey and then it kind of followed. And I was stunned. I didn't know.
I also did not know. As you mentioned, once again, the Blazers head coaching job was open, Chauncey Billups was a part of a list of names that was mentioned as far as the as potential candidates. So I quickly found a picture of Chauncey Billups in a Celtics jersey from his rookie season, I want to say. Like, okay, this makes sense. He's been an assistant for a long time, highly respected player, was on ESPN, like seems like a good fit there for Boston, has some history there. Cool. And then I learned about the case. Would encourage you, if you can handle it, to read up on the case if you have not already. But quickly felt bad about posting that photo after learning about the case. And it's the fallout was predictable because of the details of the case and things being brought up. The Blazers hire Billups anyway. And then the press conference, the introductory press conference was earlier today. We're recording late on a Tuesday night. I will just say Neil O'Shea did not handle this well at all. Like, the entire process was handled kind of poorly from the outside looking in to begin with. But the presser just kind of drilled things home. One of the, I guess we would call it a low light of the introductory presser was Jason Quick of The Athletic asking a follow-up question to Chauncey Billups. He mentioned earlier in the presser that that incident and things earlier in his life had kind of shaped him. And Jason Quick asked him, okay, how did that incident shape you? How did you grow from that? How did you learn from that? And Blazers PR immediately shut that down and basically next questioned it. It's hard to overstate how bad of a look that is. Like, the allegations themselves are bad enough to disqualify you from a front-facing position, regardless of how long ago it was. But even if you're of the mindset, or even if you feel like Billups was innocent in that case, and to that point, there were no criminal charges. It was settled. They were settled in a civil suit. If you feel like he was innocent or he's grown from that incident back in 97, you kind of owe it to your fan base to be transparent about what your internal investigation into the incident was. As you said, there was one. And also, you owe it to your fan base to be transparent about what steps have been taken since then. And for that not to happen is a slap in the face to everyone involved, honestly. I don't think there's any other way to put that. Like, transparency is what's needed. Like, the fact that a large section of basketball media and just the basketball NBA fan base in, at large, the fact that a lot of us are just now finding out about this over 20 years after the fact is part of the problem.
It is the problem. Chauncey Billups had a whole Hall of Fame career, multiple jobs after that, considered for GM jobs, now a head coach. And there's someone in the world whose world and life was completely altered forever, allegedly, in an incident when he was involved. We always, well, we rarely talk about or acknowledge the victim or the person that has to see this person have success while they remain unheard. We rarely touch on that. And as you said, that's part of the problem. That's part of the culture. It's part of the issue. And I feel ill-equipped to speak on it, but I'm gonna try my best. We conflate these conversations and combine them all into one. Should you condemn Chauncey Billups for the rest of his life? Probably not. But do you have to pay consequences for what happened, allegedly? Yes. And that has to be acknowledged before the discussion moves forward. I just don't understand how in that setting, in that opportunity, after the backlash that it received, and part of the backlash was obviously what happened, which was horrific. The part of it was we never really knew about it, most of us, or some of us, or I can't speak for everyone, so I'll tone that down. But we never heard anything from him about it. And this was an opportunity to hear from him about this experience, which wouldn't have made it any better, which wouldn't have changed the facts. But you can't just say, yo, I grew, without speaking on it. And it seemed as if he was prepared to answer it. It seemed as if he was prepared to address that. And that felt like a very key moment, transparency-wise, for people to understand and have that acknowledged by him. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, it's 21 years ago, all this good stuff. We haven't heard from him. And to not let him answer that question, at the very least, and it wasn't even a tough question. Mm-hmm. It was a follow-up on what he had said. How did that reshape your life? and it got cut off. I don't know the particulars. There was a water bottle. I don't know if it was just anything Jason Quick says going to get shut down. But to not let that be answered on the first run, the introduction, after a backlash. Like, it's not like this meeting or this press conference came right away, right after. It wasn't hastily put together. There were days before this. And you saw the backlash rolling in. It has to be better for all parties involved. It has to be. It has to be. We can't do talking points that lack transparency, that lack acknowledgement, that take the conversation to a different place. And now we're talking about smear campaigns. And it's just, no, that's not it. Acknowledge the victims. Acknowledge what women are going through. It's a part of the culture that no one wants to talk about, but it exists. I don't know how else to say it other than that.
It was just disappointing more than anything. Like, as you mentioned, like, Chauncey looked like he was prepared to answer. Like, he took the deep breath, had the look on his face, like he was about to try his best to answer the question, and PR shuts that down. And I'd need to know the rationale behind it. It doesn't make logical sense, because if your internal investigation basically cleared Chauncey, and if Chauncey was innocent, period, there's no reason to silence him. There's no reason to silence him. Like, even in the event that he's innocent, how did it reshape your life? Like, it taught me discernment. It reiterated the importance of consent, clear consent. Like, there are so many ways he could have answered that question, and we have no idea where it was going to go, because it was shut down immediately. And I don't know how you justify that. As you just mentioned, like, this isn't something that just recently, like, Chauncey being hired didn't just happen. Like, his name was thrown out there. The story came out. There was backlash. And not only was there backlash to the organization on that, there was backlash with him being in talks for the job while Becky Hammon's also in the job, which is another dynamic to get into. And then that backlash also reaches your franchise cornerstone in Damian Lillard, because Damian Lillard has attached his name to Chauncey Billups on the record. Say, hey, this is the guy I like. And like, I believe Dame when he says he didn't know about it. A lot of us didn't. So first and foremost, you owe it to your fan base, which there's a not insignificant percentage of that fan base that may have been victims of this kind of thing to begin with. Like, you owe it to them to be transparent about what's happening.
You owe it to humanity, not just your fan base.
Right.
This could trigger any amount of people.
You're right. So you just need to have that transparency to begin with. And you need to have that for people because it's the right thing to do. At the very least, and this is not the best reason, but at the very least, you offer that transparency to get Dame out of it, because you don't want him upset to the point to where he wants out, which a report comes out from Chris Haynes, where Dame is like, the backlash from the fan base has him further questioning his future in Portland. And again, the basketball is not as important as just the general humanity. Let's not even try to conflate the two. But even if you're looking at it from an organization standpoint, from a basketball standpoint, you need to have that in your role so you don't piss off your franchise guy. I don't understand. I'm just confused. I am confused. Like, Chauncey has to be the best coach on earth for you to overlook humanity as a whole. And if you narrow that down, your fan base. And if you narrow that down, your franchise player. To overlook all of that, to hire Chauncey, and to do so without offering a hint of transparency. Shout out to Sean Hyken, who asked about the investigation. and pushed for more details and basically got hit with a "you gotta trust me, bro" from Neil O'Shea. It's bogus. What message are you sending as an organization? Because the only message that we received is that we don't care about y'all. Your voice doesn't matter. And I don't see how you justify that.
We can't. It was the answering of the questions felt like it was directed to the people in the room and less thinking about the impact they could have as a whole. I mean, if you're going to tell me you did an internal investigation, why'd you do it? What'd you come up with? Or is that convenient? Did you do the internal investigation before? What stage? Like, it felt like it was, you can do that kind of bold press conference in the off season. You know what I mean? Your exit interview type deal. But for this one, you needed a little bit more. You need a little bit more humanity, understanding, transparency, acknowledgement. And it just fell short in that manner. It's disappointing. But unfortunately, it's not surprising. Like, it's just, these should be standard things. And, you know, just, I don't know why you clap back at something like that. It's not like these were tough questions. These felt like layups. Hey, tell us about the investigation. Like, when you come off with a defensive tone, it comes off a certain way, even if you're not trying to. Mm-hmm. It looks a certain way. When Chauncey can't answer that question, it looks a certain way, even if that's not your intent. Even if you did everything you could behind closed doors, nobody knows that. This is your chance to explain it. People are asking because it's important. Like, people are bothered by that. People are bothered by alleged abusers rising up in the world as the victims trying to figure things out. I don't know. I don't know, man. The Dame thing, I don't know. I don't know.
I feel you. Like, I just...
And I can, maybe, can we get a guest to unpack this? To help?
And like, that's part of these kind of conversations that I struggle with. And I've tweeted about it earlier today. And I've talked about it at different points because domestic violence, sexual abuse, just violence against women, period, seems to permeate all of the major sports in some way. And I mean, it permeates society at large. But I struggle with how to talk about it sometimes. Because on one hand, like, when it comes to violence against women in particular, like, the women have been put in these spots. Like, they have been silenced. They have been harmed. And so these kind of conversations are an opportunity for us to take the step back and amplify those voices and to listen to them and to learn. And not just learn, but to put what is learned into action to make things better for everyone. But at the same time, it seems like we're having these conversations all of the time. And it has to be tiring for women to always have to be put on this pedestal to unpack things and unpack things and unpack things and maybe trigger themselves in the meantime if they've also been victims and put them in. It's a vicious cycle. So at a certain point, like, it's up to us to kind of push these conversations forward and to do so in a reasonable and accurate and responsible manner. And I'm not going to pretend like I have all the answers. I don't. I try to read as much as I can, listen as much as I can. So I won't pretend to be perfect on this. Like, we have to be so much better. And the way that this was handled in Portland is not that. The way things were handled in Dallas is not that. And on that note, I'll say I dropped the ball talking about Dallas on the last pod. I absolutely dropped the ball. Like, this isn't something that I haven't talked. Like, I've talked about the things that have happened over the past couple of years in Dallas' organization on my timeline. So I haven't been completely silent about it, but we brought it up on the pod and I said, Dallas or Jason Kidd, they've had their own things going on over the, you know, in their past. That's too vague. If I'm going to talk about it, I got to talk about it. Jason Kidd has many abuse cases on his file. Dallas had to upend basically their entire organization because of the sexual harassment and other things that happened in their organization. And so, yeah, optically, hiring Jason Kidd after you just had to get basically an entire new staff in Dallas because of the culture that was there and how uncomfortable at best it was for women there, it's not a good look at all. And going back to Portland, like, it's problematic to hire Chauncey without being transparent about why you're hiring Chauncey and why you feel comfortable hiring him. You can't do it without being transparent. For a lot of people, the answer is you just can't do it. And I'm inclined to agree with that. But even if you're not there, you absolutely can't do it without being transparent about the entire process.
You got to address it. You have to address it. I mean, there's room for people to grow. There's room for redemption. There's room for opportunity. But the fact that it kind of goes into a room and you close the door, that part has to go away.
You can't do it like that. And one other thing before we transition, like, the whataboutism about these kind of conversations has to stop. Because 99% of the time that happens, it's never in good faith. It's not in good faith. Like, we're talking about Chauncey Billups because we're just now learning about Chauncey Billups. So responding to us reacting to learning about Chauncey Billups with, how did you feel about Kobe? How did you feel about this person? How did you feel about that person? Who did you vote? It's all bad. Like, what are we doing here? Okay, what's next? Like, if we're standing a player or a coach or an executive or whatever, and we just don't know about their history, and you're bringing up this as a form of acknowledgement, information for people that don't know things, cool. To try to make this into some sort of sports debate is gross. Check yourself if that's what you're bringing these kind of things up for. We can't advance the conversation. We can't be better if that's what it's going to be. And I made the tweet on my timeline. We can't even get to the redemption portion of these kind of conversations because we can't even acknowledge these issues without pushback. We can't acknowledge the Chauncey allegations are bad without it turning into, what about Kobe? Or why is this coming up when a black man is advancing in the world? This doesn't get better until we learn how to acknowledge these things and then move forward. Muddying the waters like this doesn't do any good for anybody.
Yeah. So should I start drinking water when I don't want to answer your questions?
If you want to get some water in your system, that's fine. But this is just disappointing all around. All the way around. And I hope we just have to be so much better. I think I'll just cap it there. We have to be so much better about this.
Well, that's an evergreen statement.
That it is, but it's incredibly frustrating. Tough to transition to actual basketball talk from that kind of conversation, but we do have playoff basketball to discuss. Again, we are recording late on a Tuesday night, which means game four of Hawks Bucks was tonight.
Hawks, that's how confused you are with your picks. Yeah. That's a loss you are. They called you a madman, and you are a madman. Bucks and five, huh?
I am a man.
This man was taking victory laps for 4 weeks. Now, nope. No, I sir.
Now I am a madman. Yes. Bucks Hawks was on Tuesday night. It would appear that only the Hawks were aware of this.
Oh, no, the Bucks were there. The Bucks were there, buddy. You were live in the building. I know you were swag surfing, listening to Big Boy, doing something reckless. Bucks were there.
Can we confirm that?
I don't know. I'll have to dig in a little bit. The rumors are flying around.
I don't know about that. Okay, first and foremost, there was no swag surfing. I just can't do that. I will say, Big Boy did perform during a timeout, and the crowd was into it. Very proud. Can't say that was the case for other performances that have happened at State Farm Arena throughout this postseason that I've talked about on this podcast before.
That little scrappy slander?
You can't have little scrappy in the arena and not know. Okay, I'm not going back down that hill.
Reheat the big mad, folks.
No, that was a shame. I'm not even from Atlanta, and I was disappointed.
Speaking of a shame, the Bucks offense. Ooh, buddy.
What offense?
You tell me, man.
Before I get big mad at the Bucks, the praise has to begin with Atlanta. To not have Trae Young and to come out with that kind of fight is a testament to their collective will, a testament to how much these guys believe in Nate McMillan and the coaching that he does, had galvanized those guys. Lou Williams had a big playoff performance.
Had a big playoff performance. Let me check his age real quick.
Is this how we're starting? Oh, 21-5-8 for Lou Williams. Bogdan Bogdanovic looked healthier, was making some shots. Kevin Huerter was also making shots and dishing out. Clint Capella getting timely offensive rebounds in the first half. Onyeka Okongwu was freaking incredible on both ends of the floor.
Lou Will's 34 years old. The good for him tracks.
Anyway, shout out to Cam Reddish for having an impact on both ends, knocking down triples, some stellar defense on Chris Middleton in particular. Chris Middleton was nowhere to be found again tonight. No other way to put it. But shout out to Cam Reddish for making an impact. The Hawks got a little bit of something from everybody.
Why you shout out everybody but my man Gallinari? It's my favorite player right now.
I've seen your timeline.
The way my knees and my back hurt watching him get it done, they just went straight low post. Here you go, man.
This is true. And we saw it in game three as well, as Milwaukee went more switch heavy in game three. Like, they were equipped to just say, hey, you got Drew on your hip. Here's the ball. Post him up. Sprinkle in some fades. Get to the rim. Like, Gallo's been doing the thing the past couple of games.
Oh, yes, and you have to salute the Hawks for the effort. It came from the jump, right? In the pregame, once I saw Trae Young was out, I was a little concerned. Obviously, for the Hawks, you're missing your big style bender. But it was a chance for them to get some more pace, get some more tempo, up the defense a little bit, and get some more ball movement. It's tough when you become a moving target. There's no true one thing to lock in on. Obviously, if you don't have the talent, it can be tough. If the defense is locked in, you can't break them down. You get late in the clock, all those good things. But they're not sure where it's going. And from the jump, Atlanta was moving that ball, and the Bucks were in rotation. And how often have we truly seen the Bucks in rotation this playoffs? That's not something they've had to face outside of maybe the first two games against Brooklyn, when Brooklyn was just surprising them with driving, kicking cuts. That hurts Milwaukee, who had found a rhythm against what they had seen as far as Trae Young coming off. It's different switching against Lou Will. You know, they ran a double pick and roll for Lou Will, I think, three times in the third quarter. He got three different options out of it because it's different. Screens are lower. He's going for the pull-up, not really to turn the corner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he does turn the corner, he's probably trying to throw a lob. So it was good there. I just thought the pace was good. The movement was good. Kevin Huerter, again, continues to hoop this postseason. It was a good team effort. Now, obviously, I don't mean to take away from what the Hawks did, but this is a limited formula. As far as, I mean, they have to have Milwaukee not scoring it in the mud, and they have to be able to make shots. Mm-hmm. Any other thing, and this thing flips the other way. But shout out to the Hawks, man. Defensively, they got after it. They fought. They didn't make anything easy on Milwaukee, and Milwaukee didn't make anything easy on themselves.
This is true. I would say, before I move to the Milwaukee side, Atlanta seemed to be more... I mean, the energy defensively was better, and it hasn't been bad in this series at all, but you could feel there was a little extra something. And I guess that's just the Trae Young effect not being there, just kind of having to find another gear to compensate for Trae not being there. But, like, they were able to build walls more effectively against Giannis, particularly in the first half, made things tough for him there. But, my God, did Milwaukee not do anything to make Atlanta think.
Oh, before you go offensively – mm-hmm. Got to give the Hawks credit for attacking those switches. I know you wrote a delightful article on basketballnews.com about Milwaukee's increased switches available now. I think it's still fresh. Mm-hmm. Atlanta made the adjustment. They just started throwing it to the big, posting up.
That they did.
But continue on with your big mad about Milwaukee. I'm going to go get some popcorn. Okay. Some chocolate, maybe. I got time.
This is... There's a thin line to walk for me between being like big mad and slanderous. I never want to be slanderous. I can lean into the big mad thing because it's kind of funny.
You literally said there needs to be changes in Milwaukee at halftime. Look,
yes. Stop. Like, I don't know how many times we can have the low-hanging fruit conversation.
It's not low-hanging fruit. They're not grabbing it. It's high on the tree, my guy.
Is it high on the tree because the tree is high, or is it high on the tree because they're like laying down under the tree instead of standing up and grabbing the fruit? Like, that's where I'm at with Milwaukee. It's dumb basketball at a certain point. It doesn't make sense what they do on offense sometimes. Not even sometimes, most of the time.
Issue is the lack of purpose for me, but continue.
You know my alignment pet peeves, but yes, it is a lack of purpose. Like, I think back to early in the game where they go back-to-back possessions with Giannis, PJ Tucker pick and roll to get to try to force the Lou Will switch. And they didn't get it. And then it just died. There was just nothing else. There wasn't even like a rescreen attempt. It's, hey, let's set the screen for PJ. Let's see if we can get it. Didn't get it. Oh, no. ISO time. And it's just like, no. Like, do it again. Or run something and then come back to it.
Or if you're going to go ISO time, get a matchup to where ISO time can open multiple things up. It just feels like they don't necessarily do what they're supposed to do. They trip into, like I said, we talked about it the other day. I feel like I'm rehashing myself, but every time it looks like they scratch the surface, they go to another room. They'll go to Giannis Middleton empty side pick and roll, and it'll work great. Or they'll go to Giannis as a screener and force Lou Will to be the low man, and now he's giving up a lob. And then they just won't do it. Just won't do it. Where's all the Middleton screening actions we saw in game 3? Where were those? Where are the Drew Holiday post-ups? Why are we trying to attack Clint Capella with Giannis in cross screens so he can have his back to the basket in a post-up?
And not only that, like, there are these cross screens for Giannis. Like, who's setting the cross screen?
Oh, I thought it was used to be because to get Trae Young in the action, but then I saw, I think Pat Connaughton was setting it and John Collins was there. And I was like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, what is the point? The entire purpose of getting that cross screen, you want a small making the screen. So you get a small guy on the screen so you can cause some havoc underneath. You get a quick hitter for Giannis underneath the basket for a dunk or a fouled attempt. Or if you get two to Giannis, you have an open guy elsewhere. But instead, they're involving bigger players in these actions. And then it doesn't work because they're running it at like 2 miles per hour. And so now Giannis, not only is Giannis catching the ball with his back to the basket, he's catching the ball with his back to the basket like 19 feet out. So then he has to face up against Clint Capela. And Atlanta is pulling their help in early. And thank goodness, because one of the frustrating things that I've seen like through the first three games of the season, like it didn't feel like they were pulling in the help early enough. Like Giannis hasn't done the spin as often as I figured he would in this series, but like he's had the spin because he hasn't had people like reaching in on that spin. Like you go back to the Brooklyn series, whenever he tried, Bruce Brown is there. Bruce Brown, they sat on it and they were ready for it. He didn't have clean areas. And it really came down to scheme at that point to get him clean open looks because the help was there. Atlanta hasn't had that really consistently throughout the first three games of the season. But game four, they did do that. It's just, it's dumb. It's dumb. It's dumb. I would love to be eloquent about it. It's dumb.
Well, you're going straight for the head. The hashtag is Big Mad, folks. Not just the lack of execution and the purpose, it was the tempo for me. Why are we waiting until there's 13 on the clock to run one middle pick and roll? Why is Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari allowed to peacefully play defense at the same time? Like, why are you not attacking the pressure points? Like, you have the sets, you have the personnel, you have the movement. And why do we keep putting PJ Tucker and Pat Connaughton next to each other? But there's just like, you know, the flaws, attack them and then react. If they come and help, play out of that. But I feel like they've leaned a little bit too much into the talent portion and forgotten that it's a mix for them is when they're their best.
And also Atlanta is talented too. Like you can't just out talent them. Like on paper you should be, especially without Trae Young, but like, I don't understand. Why are you playing on Hall of Fame? You could just play on Pro. You don't.
It's a greater challenge, better gaming experience.
Like, yeah, but not when it's just win or go home. Like, it's a 2-1 series. Their best player is out. You have the chance to put a grip on this thing. 3-1 going back to Milwaukee. And instead, you played dumb basketball on offense. Atlanta comes out with energy. They get rolling early. They had the shot making going. Like you were just never really in the game. And then you lose Giannis with a hyperextended knee. Now it's the double whammy. Not only did you not come out with the energy you needed to, not only was the game plan on offense just dumb, not only was the shot making from Atlanta superb, you then lose your best player on top of that. And to this point, ESPN's Malika Andrews said they're going to do some more imaging on Giannis's knee tomorrow. So we'll find out more tomorrow, which that doesn't seem like a great sign. But we'll see.
I would be surprised. I'm hopeful it's just a hyperextended knee. It looked bad. Hoping there's no ligaments involved. But man, that's tough. I felt bad when the artist went down like that. Oof.
It didn't look good. It didn't sound good. Like you could hear him yell. Once it happened, he was helped off the court. Like he was walking gingerly on it, but was helped off the court and then helped to the locker room, was ruled out. Like if Giannis is done for the series. Like this kind of with a tied series, if Milwaukee doesn't have Giannis, like this kind of swings to Atlanta, it feels like.
That Chris Middleton slander?
I don't want it to be. But I just look at, as good as Chris Middleton is, and Lord knows I've been driving the Chris Middleton bandwagon for 5 years, 6 years, 14, 15 season. I don't feel like doing math right now. As good as Chris Middleton is, he is a tough shot maker at heart. He's not one to gain a bunch of separation when operating. So he's not going to be someone that bends your defense. He will beat your defense. He won't bend it. Jrue Holiday, as good as he is, he's another guy. He can beat your defense. He's not going to bend it. You run a high ball screen with Jrue Holiday, you're probably going to duck under it, force him to beat you with jumpers. He's a strong dude, a guy you can post up against smaller guys, but like he's not super bursty. He's not beating you off the dribble like that and forcing a bunch of rotations. So if this just turns into a switch heavy or an aggressive drop type beat where you got to win with jumpers, and if Trae Young comes back for game five, because, you know, again, he missed game four and he's getting more treatment, so he should be back for Thursday's game at best. If Trae Young's coming back and this is just going to be a battle of pull-up jumpers and isolations, the Hawks are going to be able to create easier looks than the Bucks are.
The hashtag is Mr. AVO. I think that Milwaukee will be a lot better offensively. Obviously, the Giannis issue looms overhead. If he's out, they may be forced to actually run some action and execute some offense. And I think, now obviously Trae Young being back makes a difference, but if they're just a little bit better offensively, that's going to give them a better shot. Atlanta doesn't always get to attack. They have to face against a set defense. Maybe they can get set against some of that movement. So it's one of those things where Atlanta definitely has a chance, again, where we've kind of played tennis with this series where it looks like, oh, Atlanta's here. Oh, Milwaukee's got it. Oh, Atlanta's back. But it'll be interesting because Atlanta's going to have to replicate this on both ends of the floor. You know, the pressure is still on them to get this done on both ends of the floor. They can't have any slippage or else it'll be tough. Side note, Bogdanovich consistently goes at the Bucks' head whenever Trae Young doesn't play. I think it happened in the regular season. Mm-hmm. But this man was cursing up a storm. Every three he hit, he was throwing up three fingers and telling everybody to let's go with some expletives. So he was hype.
He was hype, yeah. He was happy for Big Boy being there. He was ready for the performance.
Big Don.
No.
Boy Donovich.
No. No. Absolutely not. But no, I am worried about Milwaukee. I am worried about them without Giannis. Like, duh.
You and Chuck.
God. But duh, Giannis is a two-time MVP. He's obviously Milwaukee's best player on both ends. Like, that's an obvious to be worried about them without him. But in particular with their offense, like, as a result of some less-than-smart basketball, there's a caveat there, but, like, Milwaukee has already struggled to create easy looks consistently. Giannis isn't just their best player. Like, he's their best rim pressure guy. He is easily their most dangerous roller. Like, he is the guy that bends what the Hawks want to do. And you remove that aspect. Like, who becomes, if they run some ball screens, like, who is their roller? Who's forcing Atlanta into rotations? Like, what is that going to look like with Brook Lopez?
Floaters and threes, baby.
Do we want Jrue Holiday building the boat out of floaters and threes?
Nah, I mean, Brook. Pocket pass floater.
Okay, got you.
Got a house out of that.
Okay. The offense is going to look mighty different.
Jeff Teague time.
Oh, no.
The reaction was worth it. 1,000% worth it. Jesus. Maybe it's get some Jordan Nora minutes. Bobby Portis, he's always ready.
Bobby Portis is, in fact, always ready.
Side note, the defense from Bobby Portis. He slandered his name after the first couple games. He looked pretty good switching. Just saying.
He can't navigate a drop at all.
Oh, my God.
This is documented. I've said this.
Accountability is everything, folks. Just remember that in life.
What do you...
You have to be able to keep the same energy that you put out there. It's fine. It doesn't apply to you. It's a general life point for the dunkers out there.
Uh-huh. I see.
Jeez. Come on, man.
Do you want to transition to the DeMarcus Cousins conversation now? Or do you have more on Hawks Bucks?
No, I was going to wait for that. Okongwu, man.
He's so good.
He's been really good on both ends. Like, as far as, like, being able to step into a this-is-my-role type deal in the playoffs, and this isn't the easiest matchups, I've been impressed. Rim protection roller, that can get you at least X amount of years and X amount of dollars. So, salute to him. It's, like, been a money off for the Hawks. Like, I feel like a lot of people have made money for themselves this playoff run.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I still have Kevin Herter in the lead. Kevin Herter can play as long as he wants. Mark my words.
Oh, yeah, that man's getting a bag very, very, very soon.
Oh, man, speaking of bags, Clipper Suns.
Oh, boy.
This is going to be very interesting for me. I can't wait to get Nikias's take because we have Chris Paul's return coinciding with the Clippers kind of thriving a little bit. We have some zone defense at play. We have Marcus Morris success. Reggie Jackson continued playoff success. Not sure where you heard that one first, folks. Paul George just taking all the memes and throwing them over the top rope. You can call him Playoff P now. Where are you at with this series? I didn't even get to DeMarcus Cousins yet.
I mean, we can start with DeMarcus Cousins if you want. Like, I rewatched...
Man, you gonna take my lead up and just go right to Boogie? Come on, man.
I think the people are here for the Boogie take. You know, we can talk about the series at large. But man, DeMarcus Cousins absolutely wrecked the Suns in game five. Wrecked them. Dario Saric had nothing for him. Dario Saric just continues to have nothing for him. It's honestly funny to watch. Just watching Boogie get these deep sales and bury him underneath the basket.
15 points in 11 minutes for DeMarcus Cousins. And I think my favorite part was I think all his minutes were exclusively against Sarge, right?
Yeah.
He got, anytime Ayton came, nope. Come on back.
And that was the adjustment from, I want to say, game one, in which Boogie got a hot start against Sarge. And then there was some overlap with Ayton minutes, and then there was some pick and rolls ran with Ayton, and there was some cutting and stuff, and it didn't go great for Boogie. But if you're just matching his minutes with Dario Saric, like, Boogie can have an impact offensively because Saric, he just doesn't have anything for him. He just does not have the – he doesn't have the capabilities for that big man. Can't hold him. And defensively, Boogie held his own in game five. There were a couple of campaign floaters, but like they were deep floaters. It wasn't even the touch the paint, really scramble the defense type rim pressure attempts. Like, if you can get that in the bench minutes for Boogie, he has a role in the series. So kudos to him for playing a phenomenal game in game five.
Did he just get a good for him for all that work he put in, man? He's had a strip against Chris Paul, went coast to coast, kind of.
He did, in fact, have the strip on Chris Paul. And on that note, man, Chris Paul.
Oh, are we turning on our family members?
You are really enjoying this, huh?
Oh, I've been waiting since Sunday, buddy.
see, I see. No, this has been disappointing since Chris Paul's return. Hasn't had the shot, which I get coming back from COVID and whatnot. Hasn't had the shot. He has tanked Phoenix's pace, which also is a surprise because Chris Paul teams play slow. But the issue with Chris Paul playing, the issue with that is that you can't play slow and then also pass up looks, because then you just get deeper into the clock and the shots get even tougher and the margin for error shrinks even more. And so as I watch game five, as the Clippers start in zone and a little bit later, as they just played some drops, sometimes with DeMarcus Cousins, sometimes with Marcus Morris, depending on who the five was out there, Chris Paul would waltz into the elbow area, would have the jumper, would pass it up. He would snake for a more contested jumper, or he would snake, draw to help, and then kick it out. But it was kind of a bailout pass, not necessarily a, hey, this guy dropped off the corner, here's an open shot being created type kick out. And it's just like, you got to pick a struggle. You have to pick a struggle. If you're going to pass up good shots for great shots, if that's going to be your MO, you got to play with some pace. You have to give yourself time to swap out the good shots for great shots. When you walk the ball up the court, run your high ball screen, pass up one jumper, snake to the elbow, miss your window for that jumper, and then either take a more contested look or kick it out to someone that can't create like you can, you're putting the offense behind the eight ball. And the Clippers have freaking brought it on defense on top of that. So, like, there are only so many good opportunities in a possession to begin with because the Clippers are defending well. Like, their defense on Devin Booker since game one has been incredible. They have taken Devin Booker completely out of rhythm. I did a mini thread on the game on my timeline, and I posted a couple of screenshots. Like, this has been a trend throughout the entire series to where, like, it's one thing to kind of show help at the nail on drives. It's another thing to kind of pre-rotate the way the Clippers have. Like, Devin Booker gets the ball on the wing, a guy just goes to the nail. It doesn't matter what Booker plans to do. Doesn't matter if he's planning to go for an ISO, if he's waiting for, like, DeAndre Ayton to come up for a set of ball screen. He catches the ball on the wing. There is a guy at the free throw line. It's his defender shading him to whatever side, and then there's a guy at the free throw line. Like, no, you are not getting middle. Point blank, period. If you're going to win, you're going to go baseline and knock down some pull-up jumpers. You're going to run a ball screen somewhere else, you know, kick the ball out, relocate, whatever you want to do. You're not getting middle on a drive, period. So, like, that has disrupted Devin Booker in addition to just the general pressure. Like, the Clippers continue, when they aren't in zone, they continue to go full court press against Paul or against Booker just to further chase the time off the clock. And there's a little bit of Milwaukee in the Suns right now in which they're not.
That's Monty Williams slander.
And I love Monty.
Let me check his age real quick.
Okay. But there's a little Milwaukee in which there is, I'll take your phrase, they're not seasoning their food.
Whoa, cease and desist, sir.
And I even made a comment during my thread, and like, it's incredibly on brand for me, but like, where's the Spain pick and roll?
Oh, here you go.
Where's anything extra? Like, where's the off-ball movement at all? Like, they would sprinkle in these cuts from the slot when they run a high ball screen just because the Clippers are helping so aggressively at the nail. And they got a couple of good looks out of that, but they went away from it. And just in general, the offensive variety was not there. Like, this is a team, particularly in the Denver series, there was so much variety in their pick-and-roll attack. And, like, that has disappeared. Like, some of that is the Clippers taking them out of the flow with the switching and mixing in the zone. So they obviously deserve some credit there. But you got to push back and try some stuff.
I want to credit the Clippers defensively for taking Phoenix out of rhythm. to be able to execute these coverages on the fly, to alternate between man and zone the way they have, to take away the Suns' automatic reads, automatic rhythm. You know, we talked about what they've done in the playoffs so far. A lot of what they've run has been based on, hey, this is your weakness. This is what we've got going. We're going to pick picture point and take this. Clippers aren't necessarily giving them that. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, hey, you think you got us a man. Now you want to come run a double drag. Oh, we're in zone. Ha ha. Now what are you going to do about it? Now next time you come back down, we're still in zone. Go ahead and run a pick and roll. I think they need to run their sets and need to just get to their stuff. Like, we haven't seen the handoff actions. We haven't seen any of that. But that's kind of a buildup from the switching earlier in the series, having that kind of impact and taking some of those plays out of the playbook. And if you kind of strip portions off the playbook one by one, you look late in the series, you're not running anything. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, Phoenix has to get back to running their sets, executing their actions, getting their movement, continue to put pressure on the Clippers defense. You cannot fall for the bait. Utah fell for the bait. Slow offense, late in the clock. You're up against it. You take a bad shot. Are you going to generate looks? Are you going to generate quality looks? Or are you going to just take what's given? You can get the pull up whenever you want. Mm-hmm. Make them move. Force them to make a mistake. They're working their tails off. Don't get me wrong. And they're doing a great job defensively. But how much of it is true pressure? So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm wanting to see what Phoenix does next against what the Clippers have done.
And I think even on that front, like, the low-hanging fruit is Phoenix has to get into the offense earlier. Like, the way that they differ their offense can kind of go either way. But they had to give – they literally have to give themselves time to do so. What's the issue? What did I do?
I just said that.
I know. I'm agreeing with you.
I'm joking.
I'm just like, what did I do? I was agreeing with your point. It's a good point. But they.
You worried about DeAndre Ayton?
In regards to game five, like, DeAndre Ayton has to be involved for me to be worried about him. And it feel like he was missed a lot in game five. Because I don't think. Especially in no Zubac in game five. Like, the Clippers don't have a great answer for DeAndre Ayton. So it's just kind of odd that he was phased out of it. Like, it didn't have to be clear aside, dump it to him on the block type stuff. Like, it didn't have to be that simplistic. But, like, it's weird that he just went multiple possessions in a row at a time, just not getting the ball.
Part of it, I feel, is what they ran. I mean, against zone, you had a step up on the side. Chris Paul comes off, snakes back middle where the zone defense is, and now Ayton's just rolling. And it's like, can we get an empty corner? Can we get something that distorts the defense? Like, it was just weird. Mm-hmm. I think you're kind of what you touched on. Like, we talk a lot about bending defenses. They kind of played right into their hands with some of that. Folks, Nekias getting ready for the post-pod club appearance. Busted out some of that good juice, that good Martinelli's, folks.
This is not Martinelli's. This is literally my gallon jug of water that I drink every day.
Oh.
shout out to the good folks at Martinelli's, though. But, it's credit to the Clippers for throwing Phoenix out of rhythm the way that they have. Shout out to Paul George, who has been incredible. Ooh,
buddy.
He's been incredible throughout this postseason run. And the stats been out there multiple times throughout this postseason. I think it's, 17 games in 35 days now for the Clippers? Something along those lines. For Paul George to still be bringing it like this, with this kind of burden, with no Kawhi Leonard, which... it's kind of odd Kawhi isn't on the bench. I don't want to make it a thing, but like it's odd at least. Doesn't have to be bad, but it's odd that he's like in the booth.
What do you mean? That's so perfect. Now you got all the cutscenes to Kawhi. Mike Brainstein's going crazy.
That was a good call for Bree.
What'd you want? Kawhi to sit right next to, what's he going to do? He don't look the exact same.
I mean, probably. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, you know, give some high fives to your teammates on the bench. Like, I don't know.
Self-awareness. You got to know who you are, man.
You know, fair enough. Like, again, that's why I made sure to make the point. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just odd. But
you know what's odd before you continue on Paul George?
What's odd?
I shouldn't ask. Do you know the four players in NBA history who have scored at least 20 in their first 18 games of a single NBA playoffs?
I know Paul George is one.
Yes, that's true. Way to spoil that, buddy.
I'm sorry. Do you want me to try to guess the rest of the list, or was that all you wanted?
No, keep going. Keep going.
Oh, man. Okay. I would assume Michael Jordan has done this.
That's two.
Has Kevin Durant done this?
He has. That's three.
Has LeBron done this?
No.
Oh, LeBron has not done this. Well, has Kareem? Wilt? It's another playoff scorer.
This is gonna upset you.
Oh no. Has Kobe done this?
Yes, he has.
Okay. All right. That's an obvious one that should have been one of them. Okay. All right, so there's the four. What were you going to add, sir?
Are you worried about Mikal Bridges in this matchup against Paul George?
I don't know how I feel about the matchup right now, which is an odd thing to say like five games in. But like, it's been a mixed bag when he's actually defended Paul George. But also, Phoenix is switching so darn much, it doesn't feel like Mikal Bridges is going to have an impact either way. Like, I just eyeballing it, and I'll check it to see. But just eyeballing it, it feels like Devin Booker has defended Paul George more in the series than Mikal Bridges has. And that's not the formula. Like, props to Devin Booker for showing some solid flashes as an on-ball defender. He has very quietly been not good off the ball. I would just say, like, him navigating help and also, like, calling out switches while also trying to rotate at the same time has not gone particularly well at points for him. But that's a whole other thing. He's been fine on ball, but, like, this shouldn't be the Devin Booker proves that the haters wrong series. This should be our best perimeter defender should be defending Paul George series. And so I give the Clippers credit for running some early action to force those switches, or at sometimes bait the Suns into those switches. But like, we need more Bridges on Paul George.
I think my favorite part of the last game that the Clippers and Suns played was the Clippers just spamming guard pick and roll almost the entire game. I think they ran it exclusively in the first half over and over again. But, like, that was interesting to me. Like, we're just going to keep picking random guards and see if you'll switch or not and get you in rotation out of it.
I mean, if you're not going to adjust out of it, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I can't say I blame them.
I know you can't blame either. Reggie Jackson.
How fun has this playoff run for Reggie Jackson been for you?
It's been awful.
What?
It's insanely triggering. What do you mean?
Oh, no. I can't say I was expecting that answer.
No, this is what Reggie Jackson does. Goes off in the playoffs and swing series. I tried to tell you guys for months. No one believed me. This man has not stopped. This man has not stopped one bit. This man is playing with the most confidence in the NBA. Name me someone else playing more confident than Reggie Jackson.
Marcus Morris, but for different reasons.
Marcus Morris has one knee and is still playing the exact same.
Yes.
He's my favorite part. This man has improved. He's legitimately gotten better. He's a playoff rotation guy. key to a small lineup, making a push for the Clippers, and you can still say, yeah, that's the same Marcus Morris.
Yeah, he does what he does, but does it better.
Oh, man. Also, Patrick Beverley is hilarious, by the way.
He's hilarious, and he's also been very impactful in the series.
Wow, Patrick Beverley praise. Let me check his age real quick.
What does that mean? And I'll say on that note, I did not expect a Patrick Beverley, Reggie Jackson backcourt to work because of the size. And like Reggie Jackson's making a bunch of shots and Pat Bev is making Devin Booker's life incredibly difficult.
32, this does not track.
I don't know what you want from me. I don't know what you want me to I don't know what you want me to do. Do you want another good for him or?
I think we've hit a season high of those today.
Oh man. Oh, so I have pulled up NBA.com's tracking data, their matchup data, because I wanted to confirm the eye test has lied to me.
The Nakai analytics are off.
According to the sweet, sweet matchup data at NBA.com, Mikal Bridges has been the defender of Paul George for 81.3 partial possessions. Devin Booker's at 37.5. So hasn't been particularly close, according to the stats.
You're going to have to retake that eye test, buddy.
Yeah, got to take another eye exam. You hate to see it. But no, it has been a lot of switching. That part's true. So maybe Booker on PG more than Mikal Bridges is an exaggeration, but it's still been a lot more Devin Booker on Paul George than I anticipated.
And so are you concerned about the Suns, or is this just the Clippers' heroic performance? It feels like a lot of people have tilted towards actual concern for the Suns after that loss.
I would say my eyebrow is raised. Like, I do think I'm so tired of having low-hanging fruit conversations throughout this postseason. But, like, I feel like if the Clippers play with a little bit more pace, that could solve a solid chunk of what they're dealing with offensively. So I'm not fearful for them at this point. I have the brow raised because the Clippers are not only playing well, they're gaining more confidence. And if they're able to tie this series up, then, I mean, Chris Paul has said plenty of times, like, I don't want to talk about 3-1. And he said it jokingly, but, like, if 3-1 turns into 3-3, I would be terrified of that game 7 if I'm a Suns fan.
Well, yeah, you don't want to go to a winner takes all against this Clippers team with the way they're playing defense and the high volume of high confident players they have who can think they can win a 48-minute game. I would be surprised if Chris Paul doesn't come out super aggressive next game. I have nothing to back that up, but I feel like he's going to come out, might take 2 shots in the first 2 minutes. It's not a good indicator, but you know what I mean.
I got you. I say a good sign for Phoenix early in the game is that whenever Chris Paul takes his first jumper, I want to know when he takes it. A, how early it is, but also, like, which jumper is he going to take? Like, is he going to snake probe and all that good stuff, or is he just going to get right to his spot and rise up? Because if it's the latter, then that's going to kind of speak to the aggression that you're talking about and kind of trying to set the tone early. So we'll see. Like, I still have the Suns winning the series, but this Clippers team has fight, and
got to salute Ty Lue again.
Ty Lue's been great.
Got to salute Ty Lue again. What he's done for this team, the buy-in he's gotten from this team, the execution they've had on both ends of the floor, it's been really solid stuff, man. I'm interested to see if Phoenix cleans up the defense. Because, again, I feel like a lot of their issues was just the guard-guard, wing-wing, screen type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they couldn't necessarily get that going. But Clippers are going to fight. Clippers are going to fight, and they're at home. What that means, nobody knows. But someone else has to step up for Phoenix. Like they need a Bridges game. They need a Johnson game. They need a Crowder game. They need something.
it'd be nice if Dario Saric could do anything outside of be pulverized by DeMarcus Cousins. But
so you're saying he's Dario Saric?
You know what? I'll give you that one. That was pretty good. I'll give you that one. I do have a Cam Johnson. How have you felt about Cam Johnson in this series so far?
Good shot making.
Fair enough. It's been a mixed bag for me. Because, I mean, he has had the shot making. The finishing has been pretty good as well. He's had some tough finishes throughout the series. Had some in game five as well. The defense is where I'm kind of struggling with him. Because I don't know how much of it is on him. Because of the Clippers switching and just also just the second unit they're running, like trying to hide campaign on Terrence Mann, particularly in game five. Like Cam Johnson has been at the point of attack a lot. And he's been bad at it. But like, of course he's bad at it because that's not what he's supposed to do on defense. So I don't know how much to like dock him for that, if that makes sense. Like he's being miscast defensively because they're hiding campaign. But because of that, the Clippers are also able to just get in rotation because they just run a ball screen with him and they get something every time now.
Which means you have 1.5 liabilities.
Yeah.
No, he's been good. I mean, this is a good experience for him. That's for sure. But they definitely take a hit defensively. I will say that much. Oh, I had a good question for you and I forgot it.
That's not a good sign.
Oh, man. Hold on. Let me see if it comes back. Keep talking. It'll come back.
Do you think we see Rondo again in this series or is that done?
No.
Okay.
It's a Ron no from me.
Fair enough.
Oh, I still forgot what I was going to say. Oh, this is going to kill me. Why is Chris Paul flopping so much? Oh, nope, that's what it was. Don't answer that question. That was a fake one to get my head going.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Chris Paul, it's gone from his veteran leadership has raised the Suns to it's almost Chris Paul slander hours. How do you feel about that?
It's odd for me. It's not odd. It's more so disappointing because he has been bad since he's been back. That's fair to say. Hasn't been good. I will say, like, the Chris Paul leadership stuff was funny to me, honestly. Like, that quickly became one of my favorite Twitter bits to where people just attributed literally anything to Chris Paul's leadership. Like, I even made the joke after Trae Young had his 48-11 game. I was like, don't forget where Trae Young learned to shimmy from. With a gif of Chris Paul doing the shimmy against Steph Curry or whatever. So, like, that was funny to me. In a vacuum, though, I feel like this is all very predictable because Chris Paul, A, was very, 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 very good this season, worthy of an All-NBA team. But the MVP push was a lot. It was a lot. Not going to rehash all of that, but the MVP push was a lot. And the overall national-ish discourse around the Suns has been very, look how Chris Paul saved his team-ish, instead of examining the whole thing. And so now Chris Paul is playing poorly. He's getting the brunt of that. All of it's unfair because it never should have been Chris Paul saved this decrepit franchise. And he taught Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton how to play basketball. But also, you know, Paul's been bad since he's been back from COVID. But, like, he's not the only reason Phoenix has struggled recently. But this is just kind of the thing that happens. So it's annoying, but I get it.
It's interesting. They got to find a way to loosen things up for him and Devin Booker. It's tough, dude, because the Clippers have the formula for this series. know, we got our defense. We're going to lock you up, get in transition. If we're making shots, it's rough. But then again, they played their tails off defensively. Paul George was amazing. But, like, you got 101 points from Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, Paul George, and DeMarcus Cousins. Like, can you do that part of it again? I think the defense is going to be there, but can you get enough on the other end to make it count? And can Phoenix get their way out of the mud? I mean, this is a few games in a row now where they're just kind of spinning their wheels a little bit. They got to get back to their pace and their tempo, as you said. So it'll be interesting to see.
Jesse, how worried are you about Phoenix in this series?
Worried if they drop this one in L.A. I think there's a lot of things they can do offensively to improve. I think they can be more patient. I think they can run more actions. I think they can put more pressure on the Clippers. I think they can attack that zone, maybe get them out of that, do some more things against the small lineup and get them moving. I think that'll open some things up for them. The defense, they have to fix that. Like, if this is just going to be a deal where they could just put any guard in screening action, you're giving a team that needs, I don't want to say needs help playmaking, but you're giving them easier plays to make. Mm-hmm. If they just know you're going to put two on the ball, mess up the switch, or you have to show and recover, now they have an automatic they can get to. Now that ball starts moving. You get the extra pass threes. You get the, like we talked about in the other pod, they're generating quality shots now. I always remember what I say sometimes. They're generating quality shots instead of just making them. So I think Phoenix needs to clean that part of it, take that off the table, and get the Clippers back into a half-court battle, force them to grind and execute, and that way they can run out and get some easy buckets on the other end, as opposed to just being stuck in the mud. Like, it's just so 14 seconds on the clock, one action. Like, that's – the Clippers want that, especially this Clippers team. They want that. Like, we can defend multiple things. We're active. We're locked in. And the later you are on the clock, the better off we're going to be. You know, you're not going to get by us every time. We're going to keep the ball in front. Now you have to take a contested shot, or you have to force it somewhere you don't want it to go. So it's going to be very intriguing to see how Phoenix comes out mindset-wise. But all it takes is one run from the Clippers.
Yeah. One defense question for you, and then I think I am good. Do you think we see zone from Phoenix in game six?
No.
Okay.
I don't think we do. I think that's the thing where that may once again give the Clippers some automatic rotation and reads. I mean, maybe against the second unit or something like that if they blend the lineups, but I don't expect it. I think they like what they can do defensively enough.
Okay, fair enough. Just wanted to pick your brain on it.
Well, pick away, buddy. That's what the dunker spot's here for.
That is, in fact, what the dunker spot is here for.
Hey, I don't know anything about basketball. I'm just a tweeter, all right?
Ah, I see. I see what you did there. Wow. Anyway, thank you for rocking with us here at the dunker spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve Jones Jr. on Twitter at SteveJones20. I guess at least until he leaves us, you know, we'll see. You know, since we've had some teasing going on the timeline, you know.
We didn't have any teasing. You know, I had a thought, and y'all went nuts. I just said, yo, enjoy the content while you can. Everybody was like, yo, my God. I'm like, yo, no, I'm old. I can't do this forever. Yeah, I can't stare at a computer screen forever. Man, y'all should be my agent.
We might just be. We're trying to help, you know. We want a team to embrace their bounce, you know.
Oh well, buddy, we got a better shot of getting KD on this pod.
And on that note, we will catch y'all later.